It was 731 patients with obesity-related heart failure with preserved ejection fraction. And the goal of this study, as it evolved, was to understand whether tirzepatide, a combined GLP-1 and GIP receptor agonist, could affect heart failure outcomes in patients with obesity-related HFpEF.
Welcome to the GLP-1 Podcast Show, a monthly podcast where you'll find cutting-edge insights and all that's working in the world of metabolic health and obesity care. Our aspiration is to be the first place you are going to go to find out what's happening, the latest updates, and the latest research in GLP-1 science and clinical practice.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Stop hiring for problems automation can solve. Start with Elevate Agents. Don't hire another VA stuck in 2015. Hire a remote AI specialist from Latin who runs AI tools, works in your time zone, and helps your team move faster. Schedule your free strategy call at www.wisevas.io. Zentrix OS, the business operating system built for teams who are serious about goals, tasks, and measurable results. One platform to run your entire operation. Zentrix Insights, the right person in the right seat starts with knowing how your team is actually wired. Visit ZentrixInsights.com.
Welcome to the GLP-1 podcast show. This brought to you by Wisenetics. My name is Stefan Trapp. I'm dedicated to bringing you the latest insights and discussions in the GLP-1 field. So get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead with today's episodes. So with today's episode, as a guest here, I've got Dr. Christopher Kramer, who is Distinguished Professor of Cardiovascular Medicine at the University of Virginia within the medical school there. And so we've got a real scientist here as well as clinician, which is great for me as a host as well, because I personally very much enjoy that deeper scientific insight, and I hope we get a lot of that today as well. And to start off, I would like to welcome Dr. Kramer, and it's a pleasure to have you here. And can I maybe as a first question ask you, how did you get interested into GLP-1 and found that it might be useful in cardiovascular disease? So please give us some insight.
Yes, and thank you for having me on your podcast today. So yeah, I was contacted by those running the summit trials, and specifically Milton Packer. They knew my expertise in cardiac magnetic resonance imaging, or CMR for short, and they were interested in a sub-study of the SUMMIT trial as it was running in doing cardiac MR on a subset of the patients in SUMMIT to try to understand a little bit more about the mechanisms of how GLP-1 may be helping patients with obesity-related heart failure with preserved ejection fraction.
Most companies know AI can help, but the hard part is getting it deployed inside the business. Elevate Agents builds and launches custom AI agents that handle repetitive workflows, reduce manual overhead, and help teams move faster without adding headcount. From identifying the right use cases to deploying agents that actually work in your operations, Elevate turns AI from an idea into execution. Build smarter systems with Elevate Agents. Visit elevateagents.ai.
Okay, so with that, so based on that, have you looked at within the heart what data there is about where GLP-1 receptors are found? Is that some direct effects on the heart that you see? Where, so we'll come into details about the study in a minute anyway, but so I was wondering, what is the background of GLP-1?
Yeah, the background was that there was, as you're aware, Milton Packer is a strong believer in the adipokine hypothesis underlying obesity-related HFpEF, that it's the epicardial and pericardiac fat, adipose tissue, that secretes adipocytokines that lead to cardiac fibrosis, cardiac hypertrophy, LV stiffness, and the symptoms and signs of heart failure in the setting of a normal ejection fraction. And that by reducing the adipocytes, reducing the adipose tissue around the heart, in theory, reducing the adipocytokines would end the vicious cycle of fibrosis, hypertrophy, and heart failure that plague these patients. That was the hypothesis underlying.
Very interesting, because also, I mean, some people also believing or think there's GLP-1 receptors on cardiac myocytes as well. And so, but yes, with this work, the idea that there's a direct effect is not so much thing, but it's secondary really then to weight loss, to loss of.
Yeah, we certainly did, with the imaging, didn't have a way of getting at, yeah, certainly not cardiac MR. If there were, say, PET ligands that could image GLP-1 receptors, I'm not sure that there are. That would be one way of getting at it. But certainly with cardiac MR, we're not able to image down to the receptor level. But we, it is the most precise way of measuring cardiac and paracardiac structures. So it's really to understand the structural changes that occur with GLP-1 and try to understand whether there is this adipocyte mechanism underlying. There's another theory about the negative effects of paracardiac fat promulgated by Barry Barlog, and he has some echo data suggested that there's a constrictive effect of the fat around the heart that doesn't allow LV and RV filling. That by reducing the fat around the heart, that you're reducing the constrictive effect of the pericardiac fat. That we're doing some additional analysis to understand whether that mechanism's at play, but we haven't gotten there with this data, with the Summit data, quite yet.
Yes. Okay. And also, can I maybe get as last starting question in a way. So with GLP-1, what also has been reported for years and years is that there's a slight tachycardia. Well, that heartbeat, heart rate goes up by a few beats only, which for a person without any cardiac problems is not an issue at all. But with a thought, could that be a problem, a risk factor for cardiac patients?
Yeah, we did not see that in the Summit trial. I think there was a significant, there may have been a slight increase in heart rate, but it wasn't clinically significant.
Okay. Oh, that's very interesting and very important as well, I would say. So, I mean, when we did look at heart rate in mice, so in my lab, we're all preclinical. So we do see an increase in heart rate. And we've been wondering, where are the receptors for that? Are they on the autonomic nervous system and so on? But of course, that's going slightly different direction.
It may be reflex, because what we found is that the end diastolic volume and stroke volume is reduced with GLP-1 therapy. So the autonomic nervous system then increases the heart rate in response to the reduced stroke volume. So I think it probably is just a reflex related to the
yes
reduction in end diastolic volume and stroke volume.
So and then so the reduced stroke volume and reduced with it, I guess, reduced force of contraction as well.
Yeah, there was no change in ejection fraction, just stroke volume per se. And you know, the demand, as with weight loss, the demand for stroke volume goes down. So it's essentially a physiologic response to the overall reduced weight, which
yes,
again, appropriate response.
Probably also with reduction blood pressure there, I guess.
Blood pressure falls as well. Yes.
Okay. Anyway, so let's really come to the main questions that you would like to discuss here. So what would you say were the main findings of the Summit trial? And maybe for our listeners, you can also summarize a little bit what the trial was about. What was the main things that you wanted to find?
Yeah, so a little bit of background. The summit trial followed the STEP HFpEF trial. So the there was a secondary analyses of many of the diabetes studies that showed there was a reduced heart failure events in diabetics with HFpEF, and then the STEP HFpEF trial was a study of semaglutide in heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, or HFpEF. And what the STEP HFpEF study showed was, and the primary endpoint was exercise capacity and how patients felt as measured by the Kansas City Heart Failure Questionnaire, or KCCQ. And what the KCCQ score showed was that patients on semaglutide felt better at the end of their year-long study. As a secondary endpoint, they found a significant reduction in heart failure hospitalizations. Now, this study was published at the time we were in the midst of the SUMMIT trial. And so we actually, without knowing any of the data, altered the primary endpoint of SUMMIT to, because initially our primary endpoint was composite, including the KCCQ score, and that became a co-primary endpoint. But we actually changed the primary endpoint to heart failure hospitalization, or a composite of heart failure hospitalization or heart failure events and mortality. And so the design of the SUMMIT trial was a study of close to 731 patients with obesity-related heart failure with preserved ejection fraction. And the goal of the study, as it evolved, was to understand whether tirzepatide, a combined GLP-1 and GIP receptor agonist, could affect heart failure outcomes in patients with obesity-related HFpEF. And so that was how the study was designed, and the interesting change in the primary endpoint as the study evolved. So halfway through the study, we changed the primary endpoint based on the results of the STEP HFpEF trial.
Did you see a significant difference between tirzepatide, or that tirzepatide in your study was significantly better than semaglutide?
And placebo. Well, we didn't compare it directly to semaglutide. It was a placebo-controlled trial. So half the patients, 731 patients, half received tirzepatide. For at least 52 weeks. That was the primary endpoint. Many patients were on for a couple of years, but the primary endpoint ended at 1 year, and the other half were on placebo. The primary endpoint was a composite of death from cardiovascular causes and worsening heart failure, defined as heart failure hospitalization or requiring an increase in diuretics, in intravenous diuretics. And so what was found is that there was no difference in mortality. It was small numbers of mortalities, 5 in one group and 8 in another. So it wasn't powered alone for mortality. So the endpoint was primarily driven by heart failure events. And the composite number of events was reduced by half, essentially. 0.54 was the hazard ratio. So basically half the number of heart failure events in the treated group. And so a fairly remarkable response to GLP-1 therapy over the course of a year in patients with HFpEF. In addition, the heart failure cardiomyopathy questionnaire, the response to that, there was a much greater improvement in the treated group as compared to placebo. So not only did patients have reduced heart failure events, they felt better. We're able to do their activities of daily living. We're able to walk further. There are a lot of other secondary endpoints that were quite positive in the treated group as well. Again, compared to placebo, not compared to
semaglutide. Yes. And of course, when looking at these drugs regarding weight loss, of course, one of the main side effect that's mentioned there by the patients is that they're feeling a bit nauseous or so. How much was that reported in your study? So I'm just wondering of whether here you're looking at, you've got a different patient population with different priorities to some degree, of whether that actually affects the perception of how this works.
Yeah, so adverse events, mainly gastrointestinal, leading to discontinuation of the drug occurred in around 6% in the treated group and 1.4% in the placebo group. So certainly there was some, and that's usually the numbers in most of the trials. Between 4 and 6% of patients have to stop the drug, mostly because of nausea, vomiting, gastrointestinal side.
But of course, I mean, those numbers are significantly lower, I would say, compared to what is usually reported for clinical trials with these drugs, which again might be interesting.
These patients are symptomatic with, you know, heart failure, and so they, you know, they're looking for anything that can help them feel better. And HFpEF was sort of an orphan disease until about 3 or 4 years ago. There really weren't any classes of medications that were shown to have benefit. Now we actually have three classes of medications showing benefit in this group of patients, including GLP-1 agonists.
Yes. So in that respect, I mean, from my own teaching medical students in the first years as well, yes, this clinical need, we always emphasize that. So in that respect, can I ask you, these other two new groups, what are they actually, groups of treatments that actually work?
So the SGLT2 inhibitors have shown benefit in HFpEF, and also a particular mineralocorticoid receptor antagonist, finerenone. There was some sort of controversial data with spironolactone, another MRA, in the past, but finerenone, newer MRA, has definitively shown benefit in a HFpEF population. So now, where it was a desert of therapies until 3 or 4 years ago, now we have a similar to heart failure with reduced ejection fraction, where we have four classes of medications. Now in HFpEF, we have three classes of medications that have shown benefit. So obviously, GLP-1s in patients with obesity underlying their symptoms as well.
Yes. No, I mean, I have to say, I mean, I find these SGLT2 drugs very interesting myself as well. But since we are on the GLP-1 podcast show, I think we would have to discuss that at some other point. That's another class of drugs where I'm wondering what are the exact mechanisms where we're not entirely sure. In the same way as here with the GLP-1, I was wondering of whether there's more of a direct effect on the heart muscle or so. But of course, from what you've told us so far, it seems to be more on effects, well, on fat pads around the
I can move on to the sub-study that I ran.
Yes, please.
Which I think gives us some insight into the mechanisms of benefit of these drugs. So we had about, I think, 106 patients that ended up in the sub-study. We initially recruited, I think, over 170. The sites that recruited these patients for the sub-study were not necessarily, a lot of them were in third world countries, not necessarily expert in cardiac MR. So there was some, I would say, issues with data quality and about, you know, a third of the patient study. So at either time, the initial time point or the 52-week time point. So we did have some data loss, but we ended up with 106 patients in the sub-study, about half in the treated group, half in placebo. Again, 52-week study. We did cardiac MR at baseline in 52 weeks with pretty straightforward protocol, CINE imaging to measure LV mass and volumes, and epicardial and pericardial fat, which we summed to call pericardiac adipose tissue. We had two very significant findings. One was that, and the primary endpoint was change in left ventricular mass. That's where the study was powered for that. We thought we would need 100 patients to show that. And indeed, there was about a 10%, 10, 11 gram, which was about 10% of the LV mass, reduction in LV mass in the treated group. So just to give you some perspective, the mean LV mass in the patient group as a whole was about 20% normal than age match controls would be. So a normal individual at this age would have an LV mass of about 100 grams. The patients in this study had an LV mass of about 120 grams. So they had baseline left ventricular hypertrophy secondary to the probably hypertension and obesity that drive hypertrophy of cardiac myocytes. With tirzepatide therapy, LV mass fell by about 11 grams, about 10%. So significant regression of hypertrophy, not back to the normal that you would see in age match controls, but a significant reduction compared to placebo, in which LV mass did not change. So significant regression of hypertrophy, which probably underlies some of the benefit seen in terms of we weren't able to measure fibrosis. There are cardiac MRI methods to do that, but the sites that we recruited, I don't think would have been able to do that. And B, we were probably not powered to show change in fibrosis. So we weren't able to look at that. However, we did look at the change in epicardial and pericardial adipose tissue and the volume of adipose tissue, and found that there was a significant reduction primarily in pericardial fat. There was less, interestingly, epicardial fat than pericardial fat. About 75 or 80% of the fat was in the pericardial space as opposed to the epicardial space. And most of the change was in that more extensive fat in the pericardium, about a 20 to 30% reduction in the adipose tissue in the pericardium, the pericardiac space. So in the treated group, whereas there was a trend to slight increase in the placebo group. Our conclusions were that this is consistent with the Milton Packer's hypothesis of the adipokine hypothesis, that by the GLP-1 drugs, or specifically tirzepatide, GLP-1 and GIP agonists, worked by reducing the amount of pericardiac adipose tissue, which in turn reduces the adipocytokine, which in turn reverses LV hypertrophy, possibly fibrosis, increases naturesis, the end diastolic volume fell, the stroke volume fell, so all leading to reduced symptoms, reduced need for hospitalization for heart failure. So we think that this CMR substudy really cemented this concept of the adipocytokine driving the HFpEF process, the hypertrophy, the fibrosis, increased stiffness, reduced naturesis, increased volumes, pulmonary congestion, inability to walk, inability to go upstairs, go up a hill, et cetera. By turning that process around, not just by weight loss, but by reduction of pericardiac adipose, you get all of these benefits.
That's great. It's fascinating to hear all this. Actually, for our listeners, if you are enjoying this episode of the GLP-1 podcast show presented by Wisenetics, please remember to like, subscribe, and share it with your friends and family. You can also set notifications on or from our channel so that you don't miss any of the upcoming episodes. And please feel free to leave us your comments at any time. Your feedback is always very valuable to us. So thank you very much for listening so far. All right, coming back to you, Dr. Kramer. So do you think the use of tirzepatide versus semaglutide, so I'm trying to get to the added benefit of the GIP GIP component. Do you think that is significant, or would you think a lot of it, most of it, is down to GLP-1?
Yeah, I don't. There certainly, we don't have head-to-head data in this population that I can definitively say. There, you know, in the STEP-HFpEF trial, there was a echocardiographic sub-study that did not show a change in LV mass. However, echo is less less precise, less reproducible, less reliable. And so you need many more patients to show a difference by echo than you do by cardiac MRI. So was it the fault of semaglutide that it did not have benefit, or was it a technical issue? But, you know, that so there were several, like, I think 400 patients in that echo sub-study. And the fact that there wasn't a change in LV mass makes me wonder whether the, you know, tirzepatide is a bit more powerful at the, at regressing LV hypertrophy. Semaglutide did have the effect of reducing left atrial volume, which also occurred in the CMR sub-study. We did see that as well. So there is reverse remodeling of the left atrial size. And that, you know, in turn should reduce in the long term, if you follow these patients for years, probably reduced incidence of atrial fibrillation as you reduce left atrial size and atrial fibrosis. There is no direct answer to the question. I have to give my best guess based on the echo data from STEP-HFpEF compared to the cardiac MR data.
So talking about the remodeling that you just mentioned in both the atrium and in the ventricle, do you think were the two are closely linked, that you had both remodeling in both and to a kind of equivalent degree, or do you think there was specifically an effect on the left ventricle to reduce the hypertrophy there more than in the atrium?
Yeah, I would say that the primary effects are probably in the ventricle, and the left atrial are secondary. As you reduce the pressure and volume in the left ventricle and in diastole, that reduces the stress in the left atrium, which then in turn leads to left atrial remodeling. So I would surmise that the primary effects are on the left ventricle, and that the left atrium are likely secondary to the benefits seen in the by reducing LV hypertrophy, LV fibrosis, left LV and diastolic volume, that in turn feeds back on left atrial pressure, leading to reduction in LA volume in the long term.
And the site of action for the GLP-1 drugs, so where the GLP-1 receptors are located, you would, from the introduction, I got that as well, you would not place that really within the heart, or within the heart muscle, and so, and with always the autonomic or sympathetic or parasympathetic nervous system, but you would place that elsewhere to reduce body fat.
Yeah, the more in the pericardiac adipose tissue. I think that's where the primary effects are, and then have all the secondary effects from the reduction in adipocytokines.
And so with this, did you find that the cardiac effects were pretty much linked to the overall weight loss of the patients?
Yeah, so that's the other thing. With weight loss comes reduced blood pressure, and that in turn, so those were all linked. They were they were sort of borderline relationships, but certainly the change in LV mass correlated with change in body weight, and tended to correlate with changes in waist circumference and blood pressure. So they certainly fell together. So it's hard to be, tease out the effects on weight loss, blood pressure, and the pericardiac fat, but they certainly all go in the same direction. The LV mass change also correlated with changes in the volumes of the left ventricle and left atrium as well. So directionally, all these changes occur at the same time. So it's at least in humans, it's harder to tease out what happened first.
Yeah, no. Absolutely. So that's like, I mean, my question there, of course, is very leading, trying to tease out what, when you think about what is your personal, if I say gut feeling about where things originate.
Yeah, I think it's all, it's, there are so many effects of this, these drugs, right? They affect, exactly. So I think it's all at the same time. It's reducing weight, reducing pericardiac fat. And then those two benefits lead to reduction in left ventricular mass, LV volumes. And that in turn leads to reduced heart failure events in these patients with obesity related heart failure. Very powerful drugs and very definitive benefits.
Still delegating work to someone who hasn't adapted to AI? You don't need another assistant stuck in 2015. You need a remote AI specialist who can handle inboxes, research, reporting, ops, admin, sales support, and marketing using tools like ChatGPT, Claude, OpenClaw, and automations. Wise VAs connects you with AI-trained Latin talent in your time zone at up to 80% less than a U.S. AI hire. Schedule your free strategy call at www.wisevas.io.
It's fascinating to hear what you're saying here and to hear all these details. So in that respect, as we're coming kind of towards the end of this already, can I just leave you to say is there something that you would really like to bring across to our listeners that we haven't covered?
Yeah, I think we've done a fairly full discussion of the SUMMIT trial and what we learned about the benefits of tirzepatide in obesity-related HFpEF and the mechanisms underlying some of the mechanisms underlying the benefit of this combined GLP-1 and GIP agonist in this disease.
So there, of course, the next development of these drugs is bringing these triple agonists in as well. So people now start to put, for example, in a glucagon receptor agonist with it. Do you see any benefit in your area for that kind of thinking?
Yeah, I mean, it's too early to say, but certainly, you know, the weight loss was, you know, for instead of 20% with this new adding the third, you see a 28% weight loss. Will there be a concomitant, more powerful effect on blood pressure, LV mass, LV volumes in obesity-related heart failure without doing the study? Hard to say, but I would imagine that there would likely be a proportional benefit. The more potent the drug at reducing weight, I would imagine the more potent it is at affecting cardiac physiology as well.
So in that respect, as another take-home message, despite the science as well, I take from this is that, yes, body weight, reducing body weight is probably the single most important parameter that can be changed to increase cardiac health to make things better for patients.
Absolutely. Yeah, so the weight loss is in these patients with obesity and obesity-related heart disease is crucial, and it's been shown to, you know, these drugs have been shown to, you know, reduce coronary artery events as well in patients with underlying coronary artery disease. Not, you know, we've been talking today mostly about obesity-related HFpEF, but the SELECT trial, you know, showed that it benefits coronary ischemic heart disease events as well. So just multiple benefits of these drugs in obesity. And then the SELECT trial, you know, even patients with body mass index between 25 and 30 has showed benefit. So very, very powerful class of drugs.
Great. Wonderful. Thank you very much for joining us today for this episode. It's been really fascinating for me to talk to you and to get all these details. And I hope our listeners feel the same as I do. And so I just would say, yes, this really concludes another episode of the GLP-1 podcast show presented by Boysnetics. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast to stay updated on future episodes. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review. Your feedback is absolutely invaluable to us. Until next time, this is Stefan Klapp from the GLP-1 podcast show signing off. Thank you very much for listening. And thank you very much, Dr. Kramer.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.